Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. I don't believe that I've seen news that is so cantankerous as has happened this year and the year before. It seems that people are getting angrier and angrier, and that legislation is getting nastier and nastier. It's very difficult to understand what's happening to this country. For instance, I saw a story just today that crash taxes are bringing hefty bills for motorists. It seems that if you have a crash and the police come out and make a report, they're going to charge you sometimes hundreds of dollars now. Now, it used to be that they might charge $27 or $30 for a report if you want to generate it. But a young man who was leaving his college and accidentally touched somebody with his bumper asked for a police report, which he got. And a short time later, a bill arrived at Middleton, New Jersey, seeking nearly $300 for the cost of the police response. That's not just the report, but the response. Middleton, the person who got the report, said, I thought someone was playing a joke on me, but after calling the police department and learning that this is a debt that I'm liable for, I just went ballistic. Now, can you imagine you have an accident, the police show up, who you're already taxed for. You're paying every day for the police department and for police services. Now these jackals want to charge you up to $300 for the cost of a police response. It's absolutely ridiculous. I don't understand it, and I don't think that you understand it either. Nor should you. I got up this morning and everything in St. Louis was totally iced up. Now, I don't like to go out when there's ice, but I simply had to go out today because a friend of mine had to go to the dentist today, and he has an elderly mother around 85 years old who has to have someone to sit with her every moment because she has Alzheimer's and she's very frail and she just needs to have someone watching after her constantly. So I had to go up there. And I'm surprised I'm still alive. I left my house and I noticed that the stairs looked pretty icy, and I put my foot down and I realized if I tried to go down on my feet down these stairs that I was going to slip and maybe break some bones. So I had to sit down on the stairs, slide down them, and even that was difficult because it was still slick. I finally worked my way across the lawn where there was some snow, which is better than the ice on the sidewalk. And I found, after looking around, some snow that went all the way across the sidewalk. I used that to get to my car. I got the car door open while standing on ice that I was about to slide on. Got inside the car, started it. The windows, of course, were just covered with ice. And I found a towel in there, and I put that down where the ice was. And then I got out of the car and began to take the ice off the windows. And after about 15 minutes of preparation, I was finally able to drive to my friend's house, which was 30 minutes away. And I didn't have any problem getting there. The roads were totally cleaned. However, part of the way up there, I decided to get some of the ice off of the side mirror. I opened the window, hacked at it a little bit with the window cleaner and started to let the window back up again, which is electric, and it stopped. It wouldn't go up. It went up about 4 or 5 inches. So after a couple of miles, I reached the stoplight, and I was able to put the window down again. As it started up, I grabbed it and pulled, and it actually went all the way up and closed itself. But by the time I was finished, I had to help his mother get around the house a little bit, and that was pretty terrible because she's about to fall over every time she stands up. So just to get her from her chair to the bathroom, from the bathroom to her bed, get her situated there so she wouldn't fall out of bed, I was absolutely exhausted. I'm 69 years old. I'm not used to this sort of thing. And I'm lucky that I lived through the day, I think. I got home and I was so exhausted just from that and the stress of the ice and so forth, plus having to go to get some salt and to put that down on two houses that I have to work with. And I slept for 4 hours and got up and I thought, wow, you know, this. I hope I get better. I'm getting older and older. I feel like I'm declining sometimes, and then other times I feel just fine. So I don't know. But it's been very cold here for a week. It was like 6 degrees for 2 days in a row. That's as high as it got. Can you believe that? St. Louis, Missouri is supposed to be a southern town. The highest it got was 6 degrees. And I'm thinking, well, obviously this is global warming. We get Al Gore up here, take a picture of him with icicles hanging from his nose. Say, Al, you told us about global warming, and I want you to see this example of it. It's 6 degrees out. It's never been so hot in December. 6 degrees all day long, Al. You idiot. Every time I think that I'm going totally nuts, I see something that makes me realize that I certainly am going nuts. I was reading this article about refugees fleeing a violent military regime in Myanmar and how they began relocating to a small rural town in North Carolina in hopes of building a new life here in the States. Unlike the typical custom of baking cookies for a new neighbor, our military has identified them for recruitment and has begun to build relationships with the new community, identifying these refugees from Myanmar as potential military assets. What we're trying to do is to plant that seed at an early age to tell them if they stay in school, stay out of trouble, improve their English, and stay in touch with the local recruiter, they could potentially get into the Army, said Major George McGrath, an officer with the Army Special Operations Recruiting Battalion at Fort Bragg. It seems that Army recruiters have met with more than 100 refugees from Myanmar, handing out hats and T-shirts emblazoned with armed services advertising. Oh, they have a history of having a strong work ethic, and they are good war fighters, so we want them in our ranks, the recruiter said. And this way we can dream past the chicken plant and they can know that there are other things in this country that this country can offer them, including joining the Army. So there you have it. There you have it. If you come to America from Myanmar, you have an excellent opportunity of joining the Army and getting your arms and legs blown off. Or you could go to the chicken plant and tear the arms and legs off of chickens as they go past you, dangling from a chain overhead. Now I have to ask you, is this what America has to offer? And is this what refugees are for, is to man chicken plants or to get their arms and legs blown off in some military conflict? What the hell's wrong with this country? We have people living here who don't have jobs. We have millions of people without jobs, and we're bringing foreigners in here who have a higher employment rate than we do. And the government doesn't care about you or me or anyone like us. They're looking to the future of a new America with people totally unlike the English and French and Germans who live in America now and the blacks who live in America now. They're bringing in people from Myanmar, India, Pakistan, other places in the Middle East, South America, China, Vietnam. They're replacing us with these people. That's the future they want in this country. They want you and me and our black friends to be gone out of here because we just don't suit their particular social experimentation that they wish to have here in America. These are Bolshevik people, mostly living in New York, that want to change this country. They want the European and African majorities in this country to be gone. And being a member of one of those groups, I have a problem with that. I'm thinking that maybe these Bolsheviks in New York, at Goldman Sachs, who are talking to our government about their speculations on oil, which is costing every American dollar after dollar to fill their tanks, which they wouldn't have to have if it wasn't speculated upon by these vicious thugs. And the same people who have told our country that we don't want to keep the mix of population we have now, that we want to change it. We want to bring people from Myanmar here and then welcome them by putting them in the army so that hopefully, if there's a revolution in this country, the Myanmars will be very, very happy to shoot the Europeans who live here and the Africans because they're not one of us. They're different. So you could expect them to shoot at us, whereas people from our group wouldn't. And that's what the government wants, isn't it? They want to be able to kill you and me if people ever rebel against the absolute hatred that our government and the Bolsheviks in New York, who've drummed all of these hate issues up against us. And there's nothing more hateful than wanting to rid America of the blacks and the whites in this country and replace them with a bunch of creamies from Myanmar and other places. That's real hate. It's one thing to hate a minority, but it's another thing to hate a majority and decide to destroy it and to wipe those people out. And I'm one of those people, and they're wiping me out and my children and my grandchildren. And they're wiping you out and your children and your grandchildren. That's your government. You better arm up and get yourself in order for what may be happening in the near future. And you may be firing against those kids from Myanmar, because there's a good chance they'll be firing at you. I was listening to the radio today, and I heard this story that Michael Vick, who was arrested for using dogs in dog fights, and went to jail for it, that he'd like to have a dog. He has children, and he says that he'd like to have a dog because he needs some companionship, and his children would like to have a dog. And evidently he's made some agreement with the government that he won't have dogs. It's part of his parole. And the poor guy wants to have a dog. And I'm thinking, this is interesting. I wonder what my listeners would say to that. Would you let Michael Vick have a dog? Is he to be treated like a sex offender who shouldn't be let out of jail because he might commit sex offenses again? Does a person who trains dogs to fight, is he always the rest of his life to be a type of person that can't have dogs around? Is he to forgo affection from these wonderful animals? Is he really sadistic, or did he just get into something that was over his head, and then when he thought about it and was punished for it, has he really changed? What do you think? Do you think that Michael Vick should be able to have dogs in his home for companionship? Do you think that he's paid his time for his crime and he should be allowed to go on now and have dogs if he wants to have them? I mean, obviously, if he's got dogs and he starts fighting them, they could put him back in jail again. But if he has dogs and he takes care of them, and pets them and respects them and shows them a lot of human warmth and so forth, well, what would be wrong with them having some dogs again? Did we overstep ourselves when we had him arrested because certain people in our society don't want to have dog fighting or bull fighting or anything like that? And what are you people in this country talking about that you don't want a man to have a dog fight when you want to take your kids and allow them to sign up for the army and go out and get their legs blown off? I mean, what are you talking about here? Dog fighting is cruel, unusual punishment, but you're going to send your children over to Afghanistan where an IED is going to blow their legs off or maybe blind them or maybe even kill them? But where are your values? I mean, what's going on here in this country? Do you have a brain left, America? You know, you live in a country that is now an empire. It's not a country anymore. It's an empire that's going after people all around the world because it wants to lord it over them and to show the rest of the world that we're powerful enough to station troops almost everywhere. And the rest of the world looks at us like, what's wrong with you people? Why don't you leave people in the world alone? Why are you going out causing all this trouble? Why do you have hundreds of military bases in America and hundreds of military bases overseas? What is there about your country that makes you such a bloodlust, warmongering biatch that you think that you should be able to go out there and kill people at will and then to tell the rest of the world that you're doing this as a police action? I don't know about you, but in my town, if a policeman goes out and shoots a criminal in the back, he's under arrest and maybe in jail the rest of his life, that particular policeman. But when we kill a funeral entourage of 20 or 30 people, which just happened this week, someone sitting in Kansas or Illinois in an air-conditioned office with a TV set, operated an airplane in Afghanistan where there was a funeral going on, and he was told that this was not really a funeral, but that he should kill these people because they were all Al-Qaeda. So he did so. And you saw this in the paper, I'm sure. And so he kills them from 8,000 miles away while he's sitting here in America eating McDonald's hamburgers and French fries and a strawberry milkshake. And you're worried about Michael Vick fighting dogs. And you're killing people. You're absolutely killing people overseas day after day after day. And you wonder whether Michael Vick should be able to have a dog. And so you concern yourself with these things instead of concerning yourself with what you should be concerned with, which is just how sick your country is as a warmongering thug that goes around the world because it has high technology and kills people, kills women, children, animals. Think of the dogs that were killed during Shock and Awe in downtown Baghdad. And you're going to worry about Michael Vick having a dog? You people are killers. And you're worried about somebody's dogs? You need to get your head on straight. There's this really crazy story that's circulating around on TV. And there's a TV picture of this high school athlete doing what's known as the butt drag, where you grab somebody when you're wrestling under his legs, in his crotch area, and you grab him and you pull him into the center of the wrestling pit so that you can then jump on him and try to pin him. Because you can't pin them outside. You have to pin them on the inside. So this is one of the methods of pulling somebody. Well, this one student decided that he had been sexually assaulted by being held in this way. That the boy had inserted his fingers between the other boy's buttocks, and this was some sort of sexual assault. And so he went to the police with it. And the police, I don't know who these police are, but I have to assume that someone in the police department's a raving idiot because they decided, either the police or the prosecuting attorney, that that this butt drag was illegal and that this wrestler needs maybe to go to a reformatory for this. And it's just kind of I don't know, what can I say? I don't want to make too much out of the story, but the father of this kid says that Preston was a bully who targeted his 14-year-old son because he stood up to Preston in an earlier encounter. And Preston's friends are teasing this boy at school. At any rate, this is just crazy. I mean, can you imagine? First of all, wrestling is a very close contact sport where you're right next to the person's face to face, armpit to armpit. You're on top of the person, and that person's on top of you. And now somebody says, "Oh, I'm sorry, the contact was too close, and I'm going to yell rape." Now, if this continues, we're not going to have any wrestling. This is, in my opinion, a type of case that needs to be tossed out of court almost immediately, because the damage being done to both of these wrestlers in this case, well, it's just unseemly. This could best have been handled in the principal's office quietly between the parents of both children. An agreement made that this wouldn't be done again with these two boys. Not a court case. I mean, we used to have court cases like this in St. Louis with the St. Louis Blues, and in Boston with the Bruins there, where people were being beaten up on the ice. You know, they used to say, I went to a fight in a hockey game broke out, because the hockey games were so violent. They're not as violent anymore. At least I don't think they are. I don't watch them that much, but I used to have season tickets to the Blues, and part of the fun was watching these guys fight. And now they're afraid to sometimes, because they've been taken to court for it. And the judges usually say, "I'm not going to get involved. This is a sports event that has a lot of fighting in it, and that's why people pay to go to see them. And this is, and all the players know that fighting takes place, and the person who is claiming that somebody hit him in the mouth has hit other people in the mouth. And I'm just suspending the whole court case. I'm not going to hold it here. In fact, I'm dropping it. I'm dropping it. I'm not going to judge this." But it seems like more and more of these idiots that run our courts, dressed in this lingerie, these black dresses, will come in their dress and say, "Oh, let's let everybody give their argument on this." And I think the judges like to see their names in print. Makes them feel important to know that you know, people are reading this all over the country. Makes them feel really good. And I think they should drop these cases. I'm not going to belittle the case. The kid might have been offended. He might have been assaulted. I don't know. But you just can't drag athletes into a court in wrestling and say the body contact was too close. Because if you don't want close body contact, you know, go into long distance running. Don't go into wrestling. The city of Detroit is in a constant state of bankruptcy, or near bankruptcy, and its mayor is planning now to halt garbage pickup, and you're going to have to pick up your own garbage. Police patrols in 20% of the city are going to be curtailed. People there have been warned to expect bankruptcy. They've been warned to accept massive municipal bond turmoil in 2011 in order to try to bring some money into the economy, which probably isn't going to happen because everybody's out of out of work up there. Detroit's really been bankrupt for years, but it just simply refuses to admit that it is. The schools are bankrupt, too. A mere 25% of students graduate from high school. But let me say something. This doesn't really have anything to do with the schools not having any money. It has to do with the quality of the students. We have the same thing in St. Louis, where we used to have only 15% of the kids graduating. People say, oh, well, they're poor. They're from poor neighborhoods. That's not the point. All they got to do is pass the test. This is a cop-out. Well, they're poor. No. It could be that they're mentally soft. Maybe they're stupid. You can't fix stupid. You know, if you're born stupid, you're going to be stupid the rest of your life. You can't fix it. When you went to school, I bet you knew when class started, since you knew most of the kids in your school, I'm assuming that you did, you could look at them and you know who was going to get the A and who was going to get the F, didn't you? Because I did. I knew in my classes who was going to get the A and who was going to get the F from day one. I could name you the kids who got the A's. I can't name you the ones that got the F, but I could name you the ones that got the A's. They're very smart. They always got the A. They always had their paper in first, and they were smarter than the rest of us. I knew I was going to get about a B minus B plus. And certain studies I'd get an A. But I knew from the beginning. And Detroit knew from the beginning, based on its student body and how low their IQ is, that they were only going to graduate a certain amount. But they were at least giving the kids a school to go to. But it doesn't matter whether the school's broke or not. That's not going to make the kids flunk in any large number. It has nothing to do with the amount of money, because those schools in Detroit have the same books that you have in your school, whether you're in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Denver, or in some real ritzy place like Hyde Park, New York. You all have the same school books, and when you learn the order of the presidents, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, and on and on and on, it's still the same presidents in the same order, whether the books are 50 years old or they were printed yesterday. So there really isn't any excuse for you not being able to learn. You might not be smart enough to learn. You might be too lazy to learn. Or you might be on drugs, and so you're not paying any attention. But I think what we know what's going on in the center of these cities is that the admission standard to get into the center of a city, the standard is you got to be stupid to live there. Because if you're smart, you'd have a good job, and you'd be out in the county somewhere in a nice area where your home would be worth 50 times as much as it is in the city, where you live in a flat, and maybe even a cold water flat. Because you're stupid. That's it. I've been living in cities all my life. I know what goes on in the cities. And if you're going to import somebody from Myanmar to be in the army, do you think those people are going to look very smart since they don't speak English? I mean, obviously, if you're going to work somebody in a factory, like a chicken plant, as that story about the Myanmar refugee said, that it's better for them to get in the army than to work with a chicken plant. I don't know if it's better or not. I eat a lot of chicken. I got a chicken in a pot right now, and I'm damn happy that there are people who are slaughtering these chickens so I can go down to Sam's and buy two chickens for $9 and in 4 days cook them up and eat them. I like that. I think there's a certain dignity among people who will help in the slaughtering of chickens and in cleaning them and putting them into the bags and keeping them clean. I don't see anything wrong with that. I can't imagine doing it myself, but yeah, I guess I could imagine. When I was younger, I would have taken any job. Yeah, I've worked in restaurants. That's not a really nice job, working in a restaurant. Although I know people that work in them and just love it. They wouldn't work anywhere else. But it's kind of a slavish job. You really have to, slave. And then people at restaurants tend to think that they have a right to rag on you if you're the waiter. And it's you know, it can be kind of nasty. You have to really watch your tongue and smile no matter what happens, or you're going to get fired. But at any rate, in Detroit, oh, and by the way, let me say something about Detroit. There's that Detroit 187, I think, is the name of the show on TV, and I just love that show. And it's one of these Bolshevik-type shows where you have immigrant-type people and black people. The black, you know, the blacks, the guy in charge of this police unit, he is so smart that he even speaks every language perfectly. And, of course, the white people aren't that smart. They're kind of stupid. That's a Bolshevik view of the world. It's a New York view of the world, because they don't like white people from Russia or England or even America. But if you're black or you're brown or you're creamy colored, then you're just super intellectual, and the white people are supposed to take their orders from you because the whites are so dumb. They're just trailer trash. And that's this Bolshevik view of the world as you see in movies and on TV, because they own the movies. They own the TV. And so they make you look like an idiot so they can feel good about themselves, even though I think from the ones that I know that many of these people are idiots. Many of these people are, you know, off their knocker and very selfish people who think that they get everything given to them and that we shouldn't have anything, that we should live a life of poverty. And eventually we should just simply exit from the world stage, because they really hate us. They don't like us. And you could tell from the way they portray us in the movies. At any rate, it's a good movie, but I warn you, it's Bolshevik, it's racist, it's anti-white. And but if you want to see a movie where black people are treated as superhuman and whites are treated as snake oil, then you should watch that one. Now, they're all like that, but this one's especially so. But it is entertaining. I like to watch it because I like to see myself slapped around, I guess. Yeah, it shows how sick I am. I've been watching these Bolshevik films and series so much that they've made me into a sick individual who loves to watch my own people put down. So if you want to see my people put down, watch Detroit 187. And I think you'll like it. Anyway, in a futile attempt to stave off the inevitable, one last time, Detroit mayor's his latest plan is to cut off city services, including road repairs, police patrols, streetlights, and garbage collection for 20% of Detroit. Now, it's probably the white section, right? I'm just joking. No, it's the gang section. They're going to cede this 20% of Detroit to gangs and the homeless. The city officials in Detroit suggest this will not shrink the size of the city. And, well, perhaps it won't shrink Detroit on Google Maps. However, Mayor Bing's plan would effectively surrender 20% of the city to gangs and the homeless. Now, that's not really true. The story I read says it's true that they're going to surrender 20% of it. But they're really not going to, you know, go to one district and not have any police there. They're just going to reduce police by 20%. But would you want to live in one of the gang war zones that the plan would create? Well, again, if I'm not mistaken, they're going to reduce this 20% across the city. But this story that I read, the guy claims, the reporter, that there's going to be gang war zones that the plan's going to create. And they ask, would you like to live in a bordering city where it's going to spill over into your neighborhood also? Just something to think about. The details were outlined by the Detroit planning officials. They offer the clearest picture yet of how Mayor Dave Bing intends to execute what has become his signature program, which is to reconfigure Detroit to reflect its declining population and physical health. The blueprint still leaves large legal and financial questions unresolved. Isn't that interesting? You wake up someday and you don't have a police force. You don't have garbage pickup. You have to pay for it yourself. Pretty neat, huh? a New Jersey physician, his name is Joseph Coleo, is dead. He died on a rainy morning in, well, about 5 years ago. And the news rippled through New Jersey's law enforcement ranks, officer to officer. And the 45-year-old physician had collapsed and he died of heart failure. And within hours, officers were calling the Hudson County Public Safety Complex. All of them asked the same question. Is it true, recalling that Detective Sergeant Ken College, who'd drawn the routine assignment to look into the death, reported, did Dr. Coleo die? They didn't suspect foul play, but they began to wonder why so many officers were interested in the fate of a man who had no official ties to any police agency. Well, with some investigation, it became clear that Coleo, Dr. Coleo, was more than just a doctor. He was their supplier. A 7-month Star Ledger investigation, drawing on prescription records, court documents, and detailed interviews with the physician's employees, shows that Dr. Coleo ran a thriving illegal drug enterprise that supplied antibiotic steroids and human growth hormone to hundreds of law enforcement officers and firefighters, mostly throughout New Jersey. I love this. From a seemingly above-board practice in New Jersey, Coleo frequently broke the law and his own oath by faking medical diagnoses to justify his prescriptions for the drugs. Now I have to ask myself, how could this Star Ledger investigation get a hold of prescription records and court documents that violate the right to privacy of these doctors' patients? How could they get? I'm asking myself, how did they get a hold of these records? Because it seems to me that there are all sorts of laws, are called HIPAA laws, to protect the privacy of a patient and his relationship with this physician. So, at any rate, in most cases, if not all, the officers use their government health plans to pay for the substances. And evidence gathered by the Star Ledger newspaper suggested that the total cost to taxpayers reached into the millions of dollars. I'll tell you, life is just, the fiction is so much, it's so much more bizarre than anything that somebody could make up in a cartoon. In just over a year, records show that at least 248 officers and firefighters from 53 agencies used Dr. Coleo's fraudulent practice to obtain muscle-building drugs, some of which have been linked to increased aggression, confusion, and reckless behavior. Well, I've certainly seen that among the police in my time. But I didn't think it was because they were going to see Dr. Coleo. Six of those patients, four police officers and two corrections officers, were named in lawsuits alleging excessive force or civil rights violations around the time they received drugs from him or shortly thereafter. Oh my, oh my. I'm not quite finished with the story because it seems that the ex-Jets quarterback Ray Lucas was prescribed steroids also and HBH by Dr. Coleo. So that's something you can tell your son. Your hero Ray Lucas was prescribed steroids and HGH by Dr. Coleo, and so, kid, maybe you should go get yourself some steroids, huh, and some HGH, and be like Ray Lucas. Yeah, baby. I stick with me. I've told you all along that I'll get you the truth of what's really happening in this world. You just have to stick with me. And I know that some of you think, well, you're so negative, you bring up all these different things that we're not supposed to be talking about, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's a fertile society. We're supposed to talk about everything. We're not just supposed to mouth the usual lies. We have to mouth the new lies that we have that are even better than the old ones. And we try to make sure that everything we say here is the truth. But there's going to be somebody who says, that's a lie. That couldn't possibly be the truth. But I have all the sources here, and you can look them up on the internet. They're right there. Just look these things up. Look up Dr. Colao, C-O-L-A-O, and you'll see these stories. So, I thought that was kind of interesting. I thought it was very, very interesting. By the way, Goldman Sachs, old Goldman Sachs again, right? Weltner here is picking on Goldman Sachs again. Warning, Goldman Sachs attack. Goldman Sachs' high-frequency trading system generates millions of dollars in annual profits for the firm. Obtained in 1999 as part of Goldman's $500 million acquisition of Hull Trading Company, the high-frequency trading system has since been modified and maintained, and Goldman Sachs took significant measures to protect the confidentiality of the system's computer programs, including firewalls to limit access to the firm's computer network and limiting internal access to the high-frequency trading program. Several measures were taken to protect the system's source code, including requiring all Goldman Sachs employees to agree to a confidentiality agreement. You say, well, what's so important about this trading program? Well, it seems that from May 2007 to 2009, Sergey Alenikov was employed at Goldman Sachs as a programmer responsible for developing programs supporting these high-frequency trading softwares for various commodities and equities. And in 2009, Alenikov resigned from Goldman Sachs and accepted a job at Tesla Technologies. And he was hired to develop Tesla's own version of a computer platform that would allow Tesla to engage in high-frequency trading. And although Alenikov tendered his resignation in April, it appears that he did not make that separation effective till the first week of June 2009. So now, he's in trouble for telling this other firm what Goldman Sachs is doing. And what they're doing, what's really so dastardly, is that they're doing these high-frequency trades, and their computer is faster than anybody else's. So they beat people by a billionth of a second in placing orders, and they're able to make millions of dollars on the spread. Because as soon as a story breaks, their computer is on it and making either a sale or a buy based on what the story was. And the early bird gets the worm in stocks, and so they've been able to outbeat these people in placing their orders either to sell or to buy. And so at any rate, this man, they said, took some source code, and they're very upset. Well, so Goldman Sachs, why don't you just shut up? You've been doing so many shady things in America. You know, what are you even doing talking to a Forbes reporter about this, you idiots? You people should be in jail. You should be in jail. Right now you're driving up the price of oil again. It's $3 in St. Louis. I have to pay that because you are messing with oil futures, driving the price up for everybody, and it's not even the future yet. But because of your gambling on what you can do to increase that price, you're causing me to have to pay more money to fill my car up. And I want my money back. You owe me that money. You have no right to damage me in order for you to make a profit. How could you make a profit by damaging me without being responsible for the damage you did to me and to the other 300 million Americans who you're screwing over with your speculations with our money that we gave you to keep you in business, stupid as we are. Our government is a low-life government because it supports creeps like you, creeps like Bank of America and all these other shady institutions that exist only to make money, and they don't care if you destroy the lives of other people or even if you destroy the economy, which you've done several occasions. You've destroyed our economy on several occasions. You despicable creeps. The FCC has off and on tried to make certain that the different news studios around the country are fair in their reporting. Now, the Republican Party, for some reason, feels that these studios should be free to do whatever they want. I think the Republicans feel that if you have enough money and you're rich enough, you should be able to bamboozle all Americans by even lying about the news itself and leaving things out by omission, so that the Americans are basically kept dumbed down, so they can't really think about major issues, which means that the democracy itself cannot function properly because of an untrained and reported populace that knows nothing about what's going on, or at least very little. Since 1949, the Federal Communications Commission has created rules requiring broadcasters to cover issues that the government deemed important, and to do so in a way that the government found honest, equitable, and balanced. And if a broadcaster didn't do this, the FCC reserved the right to revoke the station's broadcasting license. Now, I don't believe they ever got rid of a station's broadcasting license as a result of this. The rule itself was called the Fairness Doctrine, and the FCC abandoned it in 1987, basically because the Republicans didn't want it anymore. I find the Republicans so despicable. This is my own personal opinion. Why would anybody vote for a bunch of pro-millionaire people? Most of you don't ever have a chance of being a millionaire. Most of those of you who are voting for the Republicans are poor. You have a house that's owned by a bank that you have to pay money to month after month, and if you don't, the bank will put you out in the street. But you want billionaires to be able to own a corporation and not to be told what to do by government. But you, as a homeowner, are told by government that, by God, you're going to pay that bill on that mortgage, or we're going to allow the bank to kick you out of that house. Now, when you're talking about the government and the banks, you're talking about the same being. These are the same people. The bank and the government are hand in hand. Someone wrote the other day that the reason you can't meet with a congressman is they're too busy making love to a bank. When you go up to Washington, where's my congressman? Well, he's not here right now. Well, where is he? He's making love to a bank. That's where he is. He's got his tongue inside of a bank, and the bank is fondling his rear end and putting money in his back pocket. That's where the congressman is. He's making love to a bank. These people are so crooked, and the banks are so crooked. Everybody that works for a bank knows you're not supposed to pay a congressman for influence, but they'll sit there and do it. Every government official knows they're not supposed to take money in order to vote for a bank. That's a conflict of interest. If you're being paid by these people and then you vote for them, conflict of interest. Well, obviously, the whole Congress is in the midst of a conflict of interest because that's how it operates. But you and I are supposed to go along with this. You know, if I paid a congressman some money to say something nice about my particular newspapers on the internet, such as the American USSR or Jew Watch News, I could. They'd probably go after me because they don't like me. I'm considered to be in an unpopular area of journalism. And they want to call me fraudulent. They want to call me this. They want to call me that. Well, they're just a bunch of liars. And they always have been liars. You know that. I know that. That's the way the system works. And it's really crazy. And speaking of crazy, there was a story this week about Mark Chapman, who was John Lennon's murderer, that he was recruited by the CIA and trained by them during his travels around the world. Can you imagine that? The guy that shot John Lennon was hired and trained to kill him by the CIA. That's what the story says. I'm not lying to you. And it was written by Tony Reynolds. And he asked the question, was John Lennon's murderer, Mark Chapman, a CIA hitman? He says, for many baby boomers whose formative years coincided with the swinging 60s, a mild Monday in early December 1980 will always be remembered as the day the music died. In New York, the enigmatic, charismatic, and frankly often loony ex-Beatle John Lennon staggered into the entrance hall of the Dakota, the exclusive Parkside Mansion block that had been his home for nearly 8 years. The cassettes of a new song the 40-year-old had just recorded, called Walking on Thin Ice, clattered to the floor as he collapsed, blood flowing from 4 gunshot wounds. And guess what? According to this new theory, the FBI recruited Chapman to kill Lennon. And there's a movie that has been produced that has this particular story as a part of the plot line. And so is it true? Did the CIA do this? Did they train Chapman to kill Lennon? I remember seeing stories back then about the CIA being very, very upset about the Beatles because they felt they were a threat to the national security of our land. And it struck me, well, how could they be a threat to our national security when all these Bolsheviks are in charge of our newspapers and news studios on TV and radio? How could they be concerned about the Beatles when they're all these left-wing wacko radicals running the news who are from the Bolshevik families that founded the Soviet Union using banking money? Why would they be so concerned about Lenin? And the reason is that Lenin wanted to stop these wars, like I do. And so he was a persona non grata. He had songs about let's end the wars. And they're afraid that he might become a political threat to the American war machine. And if the war machine of America's begins to slow down, then the economy slows down. The banks slow down because a lot of their money comes from this sadistic war machine that allows the government to go around killing millions of people every year and to put in hundreds of military bases and to maintain them. So, that's why they would want to shut down John Lennon and the Beatles, because they want to keep their war machine going on forever. Because these are evil people, and this is an evil government. British Petroleum, the company whose CEO was also the CEO of Goldman Sachs, the CEO who disgraced himself before Congress, the CEO who decided to go to a yachting club exhibition rather than to stay close to the Caribbean and try to stop the oil spill that British Petroleum had started. British Petroleum is now trying to skittle away from having to pay for the oil spill by planning. Their plan is to challenge the estimates of the oil spill. They're going to challenge these official government estimates of how much oil leaked from its runaway well in the Gulf of Mexico, a move that could reduce its legal liability by billions of dollars. Do you remember how they said that we're going to own up to this and we're going to pay whatever damage we did? So now they're saying that federal scientists estimated 4.9 million barrels of oil had leaked from the well before it was capped, a figure that BP now argues is 20 to 50% too high. Under the Clean Water Act, BP faces fines of up to $21 billion, or $4,300 per barrel if courts determine that it acted with gross negligence before the accident. Well, from what I read, how could they not find them guilty of acting from gross negligence, since they decided that they wouldn't even try to secure the well before they began exploiting it, which is what caused it to leak for so many months? British Petroleum has not offered its own estimates of how much oil spilled, but in the documents filed with the National Commission on the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill and offshore drilling, it questioned the accuracy of the government's figures. Well, I could understand that. I mean, I know they don't want to pay for it. You wouldn't want to pay for it either. If they can squiggle out of it, I'm sure they'd like to. And I'm sure with all their big fat-ass lawyers are going to be able to do something like that. It doesn't matter that thousands of people have had their lives destroyed. The people around the world got an opinion of British Petroleum as a result of their irresponsibility in handling the situation and even in causing it, allegedly, that they don't want to hear anything else more about British Petroleum. In fact, I'll never buy a drop of gas from British Petroleum, and I hope that nobody else buys a drop of gas ever from British Petroleum. I mean, this is a company that has a long history of environmental disasters, and it really deserves to go the way of the dodo bird and to become extinct because of its stupidity and its arrogance and its idiotic way of conducting business. I certainly hope that I've been able to educate you in this program as to the deficiencies in American governance, deficiencies in the economy, deficiencies in the capitalist system, which allows the dangerously rich to dominate every industry in our country, and to make unwise decisions to basically give donations to our congressmen, and to take them over to use for themselves, so that we're not represented by these congressmen, but these rich people, these elitists, get all the representation they want, including the passage of bills that have up to 16,000 pages of giveaways to these companies, whereas you and I don't get a single giveaway, because these big companies have the money to parade in front of these congressmen, and that's exactly what they do. And you and I don't have that kind of money, so we don't get the same consideration. Instead, you and I are just supposed to pay the bill. When these banks destroyed our economy, they said, you need to pay trillions of dollars or you're going to have an economy that will never recover. And we told the Congress not to pay that money, but they went ahead and did it anyway. And then that great promise, the promise that if we paid this bill just this once, that everything would be fine. Now they say that's not true. Everything's not going to be fine, and most of your money went to Rothschild banks across the big pond over in Europe, and not to American banks at all.